It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.rir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Generally, when you apply for a mortgage, you have to show that you have a stable income. But for those who depend on Social Security disability income, usually they don't have any documentation saying how long this income will continue, even though the Social Security Administration provides these benefits for individuals with serious disabilities. It generally will not provide documentation regarding how long the benefits will last.
Timothy Lambert, Senior Counsel from the Office of Fair Lending and Equal Opportunity at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, discusses the recent compliance bulletin on Social Security disability income verification, which will prevent lenders from asking for unnecessary details when people receiving disability attempt to qualify for a mortgage. And during this week's News You Can Use, we discuss the latest attack on the Affordable Care Act and the surprising facts about one of the plaintiffs. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 262, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.rir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last week at the United States Supreme Court, quality, affordable health coverage for 8 million Americans and 385,000 Virginians was under attack in an argument about whether people should be penalized if they live in a state, like Virginia, that has not developed its own marketplace where people can shop for private insurance. Surprisingly, one of the four plaintiffs in the case, Brenda Levy, lives outside of Richmond, Virginia. According to Mother Jones magazine, Ms. Levy, age 64, will qualify for Medicare in June, around the time the Supreme Court is likely to issue a decision. Ms. Levy was recruited as a plaintiff by the Libertarian Competitive Enterprise Institute, a think tank funded by big pharmaceutical firms, oil and gas outfits, the Koch brothers, Google, tobacco companies, and conservative foundations. At the time she spoke with Mother Jones, she had yet to attend any of the court proceedings or meet the lawyers handling the case in person. When asked if she realized that her lawsuit could potentially wipe out health coverage for millions, she is quoted as saying, "I don't want things to be more difficult for people. I don't like the idea of throwing people off their health insurance." Levy was under the impression that if the case prevailed, someone would surely fix the insurance situation, believing that Virginia's Governor Terry McAuliffe wanted to expand Medicaid. She didn't know that Medicaid expansion was part of Obamacare, or that the same forces backing her lawsuit have opposed this expansion in Virginia. She also was unaware that there is no Plan B in the works to rescue the people who could lose their insurance if her case is successful. Levy also was under the impression that Obamacare had caused many Americans to lose their insurance and for premiums to rise. In fact, the percentage of uninsured Americans has fallen from 18% to 13.4% since the law took effect last year. And Obamacare has made healthcare more affordable than ever before. This especially holds true for Levy. She told Mother Jones she faced monthly health care premiums of $1,500. Levy hadn't checked out the plans she qualifies for under Obamacare, but an October 2013 affidavit filed by the government in the Supreme Court case indicates that at that time she could have purchased a low-cost bronze plan on the federal exchange for $148 a month. Given this, it's unclear how Obamacare has cost her any real harm. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. More than 15 million people receive Social Security disability income, but many cannot qualify for a mortgage when lenders ask for unnecessary benefit details. Timothy Lambert, senior counsel from the Office of Fair Lending and Equal Opportunity at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, in a national phone call on January 16, 2015, discussed the recent compliance bulletin on Social Security disability income verification, which will prevent lenders from asking for unnecessary details when people receiving disability attempt to qualify for a mortgage. Here are his comments.
I am a senior counsel in the CFPB's Office of Fair Lending. And first, I'd like to say just a word about the Office of Fair Lending. Our mission is to ensure fair, equitable, and non-discriminatory access to credit for both individuals and communities, and particularly in relation to two federal laws, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, which we usually call the ECOA, or the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, which we refer to as HMDA. The ECOA, among other things, protects consumers against discrimination in any aspect of a credit transaction on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, sex, marital status, age, the fact that an applicant has in good faith exercised rights under the Consumer Credit Protection Act, and important for this call today, the fact that an applicant receives public assistance income. We call those the protected classes sometimes, the people who are protected against discrimination under the ECOA. The other law, HMDA, requires lenders to collect and submit information on home mortgages, which the government then makes available to the public. The Office of Fair Lending does several things with these laws to help consumers. First, we examine financial institutions to find out whether they're complying with these laws. Specifically, we have supervisory authority over large banks and over non-depository institutions such as mortgage companies. We also have authority to bring court actions. And in addition, the CFPB has rulemaking authorities for these laws, which allows us to promulgate rules that have the effect of law and help to describe the obligations and the rights that are available under those laws, and provide guidance on what the laws require. It's part of that last task of providing guidance on how to comply with these civil rights laws that sometimes we issue bulletins like the one we'll discuss today. In November, the Bureau issued a bulletin on Social Security disability income verification. In the invite for this call, there is a link to the bulletin itself. Or if you don't have that link, you can simply go to the CFPB website, search the word disability, and you'll find the bulletin that way. By way of background, in the past, Social Security disability income recipients have faced special problems in trying to qualify for a home mortgage. Generally, when you apply for a mortgage, you have to show that you have a stable income. But for those who depend on Social Security disability income, usually they don't have any documentation saying how long this income will continue, even though the Social Security Administration provides these benefits for individuals with serious disabilities. It generally will not provide documentation regarding how long the benefits will last. So some applicants who want to rely on this income have reported being asked by mortgage lenders for information about their disabilities or for statements from their physicians about how likely their disabilities are to continue. We hope that many of these problems will be cleared up through mortgage guidelines and standards that have been announced over the last few years. And one reason we issued our bulletin is to make sure that lenders were aware of all of these rules. For example, to verify income or qualified mortgage debt-to-income ratios under the CFPB's ability to repay rule, lenders need to look only to whether the Social Security Administration benefit verification letter or equivalent document includes a defined expiration date for payments. Specifically, the CFPB's rule explains that if Social Security Administration benefit verification letter does not indicate a defined expiration date within 3 years of the loan origination, then the lender shall consider the income effective and likely to continue. And it also says that pending or current reevaluation of medical eligibility for benefit payments is not considered an indication that benefits are not likely to continue. The Department of Housing and Urban Development has taken a similar approach for loans insured by the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, as has the Department of Veteran Affairs for loans that it guarantees. The HUD guidance further emphasizes that under no circumstances shall lenders inquire into or request documentation concerning the nature of a disability or the medical condition of the borrower. HUD also states that pending or current reevaluation of medical eligibility for benefit payments is not considered an indication the benefits are not likely to continue. Fannie Mae's guidelines similarly explain that Social Security income for long-term disability that the borrower is drawing for his or her own account or work record will not have a defined expiration date and therefore must be expected to continue. And these guidelines also provide that lenders will verify this income simply by obtaining either a copy of the Social Security Administration's award letter or proof of current receipt, and for SSI by getting both those forms of documentation. Freddie Mac's guidelines provide that long-term disability income, including Social Security disability benefits, may be considered qualifying income that is a reasonable expectation of continuance, unless there's a predetermined issuance or benefit expiration date that is less than 3 years. And the guidelines also state that pending or current reevaluation of medical eligibility for insurance or benefit payment is not considered an indication that the insurance or payment will not continue. So how does all this relate to fair lending? As I mentioned before, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, or the ECOA, and its implementing regulation, Regulation B, both of which the Bureau enforces, the CFPB enforces, prohibit lenders from discriminating in any aspect of a credit transaction, which includes a mortgage transaction, against an applicant because all or part of the applicant's income derives from a public assistance program. And a public assistance program here includes Social Security disability income. In addition, the Fair Housing Act, which other federal agencies enforce, prohibits discrimination because of disability in residential real estate-related transactions. So, fair lending concerns may arise when a lender requires additional documentation beyond that required by lawful applicable agency or secondary market standards and guidelines to demonstrate that Social Security disability income is likely to continue. And those would include requesting information about the nature of the applicant's disability or a letter from an applicant's physician. All of those could raise fair lending concerns. The standards and the guidelines that I've mentioned from the CFPB, from HUD, from the VA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, may all help lenders avoid unnecessary documentation requests and increase access to credit for persons receiving Social Security disability income. And in addition, we hope that following these standards and guidelines may help lenders avoid policies and practices that may violate ECOA and Regulation B. I'd like to end just by noting that if anyone feels that their rights under the ECOA or Regulation B, the rights that I've discussed today, have been violated, they can file a complaint with us on our website, www.consumerfinance.gov. On that same website, we have a number where you can call in to lodge a complaint over the phone, and we accept complaints in over 180 languages. And with those complaints, you will receive back from the CFPB notification of the complaint and the steps that will be followed after the complaint is filed. So I encourage you to use that website if you feel that your rights have been violated under the ECOA Regulation B.
You've been listening to Timothy Lambert, Senior Counsel from the Office of Fair Lending and Equal Opportunity at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, in a national phone call on January 16, 2015, discussing the recent compliance bulletin on Social Security disability income verification, which will prevent lenders from asking for unnecessary details when people receiving disability attempt to qualify for a mortgage. We'll be back in a moment. Also on the national phone call on January 16, 2015, was Kathy Martinez, Assistant Secretary of Labor at the Office of Disability Employment Policy, discussing the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, which targets financial literacy services to job seekers with disabilities. Here are her comments.
Thank you, Daniel, and I really appreciate being able to join my colleagues from CFPB to talk with you all today about this important matter of financial capability for people with disabilities, including those who receive SSDI, or Supplemental Social Security, or with Social Security Disability Income. For several years now, ODEP has been collaborating with the CFPB to promote socioeconomic advancement of folks with disabilities, and we've been joining forces around the intersection of our critically important missions. And for us, that's been we've been a great team. We were a great combo. CFPB's mission is really critically important, because without CFPB, you know, we wouldn't have a central federal entity responsible for monitoring and protecting consumers from harmful financial practices. And similarly, without the Office of Disability Employment Policy, there would be no federal entity focused on changing policies to increase employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Over the past 12 years, the Office of Disability Employment Policy, or ODEP, has invested in validating innovative strategies to demonstrate that people who were previously considered unemployable can work, can be productive, can contribute as taxpayers, and can participate in the economic mainstream of this country. But we realize that while work is an essential first step toward financial empowerment, it's just the beginning. Having a job is one thing, but building a financially stable life takes much more than having a stable source of earned income. It requires having access to mortgage, lending, and other forms of credit, and I would say that financial survival in this country, that access is critical. And this is why CFPB's mission makes so much sense for those folks who are middle and lower income workers, and particularly for folks with disabilities. People with disabilities have represented the largest percentage of Americans living in poverty of any other subpopulation for the past decade. And beyond the common barriers of low wages and poor benefits faced by many hardworking Americans, workers with disabilities also face a number of additional challenges. First, I would say, having a disability is expensive. Additional costs of living with a disability are significantly higher than they are for folks who do not have a disability. Many technologies and other accommodations that are required for people with disabilities to work and live are expensive and often not covered by Medicaid or by private insurance. Transportation costs are often much higher as cars have to get modified to accommodate various types of disabilities. And for those of us like me who can't drive, public transportation costs can also be higher than the average car. And very often we have to pay people to take us places. Many people with disabilities also require personal care assistance or folks to help them with specific tasks of their daily living. And again, these expenses may be only partially covered by insurance. Youth and adults with disabilities must be able to organize and balance these expenses as they live life in their communities as independently as possible. People with disabilities may also be at greater risk of falling prey to predatory lending schemes. We want to make sure that people with disabilities have the information that we need to protect ourselves and our assets from being taken advantage of. And as previously noted by my colleagues from CFPB, many people with disabilities face credit challenges that make it difficult for us to rent or own a home, buy a car, take out a loan, or even get a job for that matter, because now some employers are checking credit scores. Some people can find ourselves in very tough positions, and we believe that with the proper access to credit counseling, individuals can be armed with the information that they need to make wise decisions to improve their credit status over time. And we're very happy about the financial coaches that you guys are putting in the field. I would say that that's why some of ODEP's investments have been targeted toward helping the public workforce system incorporate asset development and financial literacy, benefits planning, and individual budgeting activities within their current portfolio of services for people with disabilities. Our Technical Assistance Center, the National Lead Center, is currently helping us test a number of strategies to build the capability of professionals in the public workforce system to work with people with disabilities on achieving financial goals as they enter the workforce. In the past 6 months, there have been two notable legislative changes that will hopefully lead to an even greater focus on improving financial capability for youth and adults with disabilities. The first is the passage of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA, as we call it. And this new law provides the opportunity to target financial literacy services to job seekers with disabilities through the America's job centers across the country. And as job seekers prepare to enter the workforce, it's critically important that they understand the importance of building financial knowledge, including building their credit. Providing training and information in this area is critical. Second is the passage of something called the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, or the ABLE Act. And this new law is another important step in opening the door to employment for folks with disabilities, because oftentimes concern about loss of benefits keeps folks outside the workforce. And the ABLE Act will allow some people with disabilities and their families to save resources to pay for long-term support and services without jeopardizing their access to Medicaid and other public benefits. But we still have a long way to go, especially in the area of ensuring non-discrimination for folks with disabilities who rely on public benefits programs. The recent compliance bulletin issued by CFPB is a great step to ensuring that folks with disabilities on SSDI are not prevented from investing in a home or accessing credit, things that we all really desire to do. And it's just really the step to the middle class in this country, and it really means a step toward equal and full participation in our society. ODEP looks forward to continue to work with the CFPB to create better financial capability for job seekers and employees with disabilities. And we commend CFPB for their work to ensure that those most at risk of abusive financial practices have access to the resources that they need to make informed financial choices.
You've been listening to Kathy Martinez, Assistant Secretary of Labor at the Office of Disability Employment Policy, discussing the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, which targets financial literacy services to job seekers with disabilities, in a national phone call on January 16, 2015. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. In a wide range of situations, involuntary treatment of a mentally ill person is absolutely essential. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney and mental health law judge Robert Flax talks about the procedural and substantive protections in place when a person is involuntarily committed due to mental illness. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegway.